Fan.
Ezekiel 25:17. The path of the righteous man is beset on all sides by the iniquities of the selfish and the tyranny of evil men. Blessed is he who in the name of charity and goodwill shepherds the weak through the valley of darkness, for he is truly his brother's keeper and the finder of lost children. And I will strike down upon thee with great vengeance and furious anger those who attempt to poison and destroy my brothers. And you will know my name is the Lord when I lay my vengeance upon thee.
The naysayers keep questioning the Minnesota Twins. I don't know who they are, by the way. I wish they'd come to the forefront and identify themselves. And the Minnesota Twins keep winning. That's all they do. They toy with the Kansas City Royals again last night. Final score, 9-2. I think we're on a pace now to win 110 games this year. We're running away with the division. And yet, the cynics, the skeptics, and you know who you are, continue to question whether it's real, whether it will hold up over the course of a 162-game season. All I can say to all of those cynics and skeptics is, what's wrong with winning? Good morning. Sunday sermon starts right now. Barrero and Blakemore until 11. Cake Show 11 until 1 o'clock on what looks to be... I would describe this morning as a nice, crisp fall morning. I love these kinds of mornings. Although usually it means the leaves are about off the trees and reality is about to set in. But that's what we're faced with here, even before Memorial Day. Thanks for joining us this morning. Booth@KFAN.com is a way you can communicate directly with us. That is the Bradshaw and Bryant inbox. We might mix in phone calls later. We'll see. I do know that we'll talk baseball with our old friend Kevin Kernan, who has been a baseball big knocker for decades. These days writes for a very up-and-coming website called ball9.com. If you've ever heard Kernan, you know that with each appearance on this show, the over-under on him uttering the word nerd with great contempt is about 9 seconds. And some of you even play the drinking game. You take a sip of whatever your beverage is every time Kernan says the word nerd, and chances are by the end of his appearance, you will be in no condition to drive. You might not even be in any condition to stand up. He does not like nerd ball. I don't either. Probably don't despise it as much as he does, but we'll chat with him about some interesting stuff he's been writing lately. And maybe we'll get into the latest Josh Donaldson controversy that got a lot of attention over the weekend as well. I will admit, I might have been one of those skeptics regarding the Minnesota Twins. There's still something holding me back. Well, there's a couple things holding me back from saying this is real. And by the way, when I say this is real, I don't think there's any question that this is not a bad baseball team. That's clear. It strikes me as a team that's a slightly above 500 team. But maybe, once again, I am underrating just how helpful a crappy division can be. Because you play in the division a lot, and the Twins are playing in the division now, and the Kansas City Royals are a mess. Detroit Tigers are a mess. The White Sox look like a mess, but in part, it's because they're playing the Yankees. The Yankees are absurd this year. Brett Blakemore, do me a favor, call up the MLB standings and let me know the current record of the Bronx Bombers, the New York Yankees.
They are 29-10.
29-10. I'm assuming, is that the best record in baseball? Gotta be, or gotta be close.
It is in the AL.
29-10.
It's best record in baseball.
Yeah. So, we talked about the fact that we're in this long stretch. I think 15 games of playing crappy division teams. And then on the back end of that, we've got three series. I think it's Toronto, then it's the Yankees, and then I want to say it's Tampa Bay, Tampa Bay. And by the end of that stretch, I think it's mid-June, and perhaps we get I like to think that we'll have a better idea about how real this particular gaudy record actually is. Because in the end, we got a lot of baggage in this town as it pertains to what good records lead to. What we want to believe is that we are fashioning a team that gives us a chance to do something in the postseason with our regular season success. Sounds a little bit like how Minnesota Wild fans feel right now, I think. But that's what makes this problematic. It's not the fault of these current Twins, or many of them, most of them, what has happened when the Twins have gotten to the postseason, 18 straight losses, forgetting the notion of actually winning a series. But that's what they're saddled with. And that's what they're going to be saddled with until they are able to do something about it. That's the best I can put it. By the way, another pitching injury. Winder as sort of this is being viewed as a cautionary tale. We're trying to get ahead of it. We're trying to be really careful because he had some issues last year. I think it's shoulder. He's out. I'm not saying this isn't the right move, but what it does remind me of is what we've talked about it intermittently over the last, I don't know, year or two, that I don't have the analytics in front of me that say more people, more baseball players are getting hurt than any previous generation. But I think it's safe to say there are just as many. And in some cases involving pitchers, it almost feels like no matter how carefully they are nurtured, no matter how much they are coddled, they're ending up on the shelf more than ever. There's another Tommy John surgery being performed every 3.6 days. We just had one. Paddock, our guy Paddock. Last Wednesday, I believe, Tommy John surgery. His second, I might add. So, another pitcher goes down, but it doesn't seem to matter. We take care of business 9-2. We get another very well-pitched start from your guy, Ryan. And I guess you could say the rest is history. So I don't know. I'm going to be stubborn about not being there, not willing to say, that's a damn good ball club. I might pay for it, and eventually I might have to apologize for it, and if I have to, I will. And I might be, like I said, a lot more willing to do exactly that at the point when we get through that this stretch of, we could go, we said Friday, we speculated, we could go 13-2 during this 15-game stretch. It wouldn't surprise me. They probably should. And let's face it, if you beat up on bad teams, you're going to give yourself a chance at a pretty damn good record. The old cliche is what? beat up on the bad teams, go 500 against the good ones, and you'll be fine. And we're going to give ourselves a lot of, I guess you could say, cover if we continue to beat up on bad teams in the division. Joe Ryan, the starter who performed admirably again last night. BoothaCafan.com is the Bradshaw and Bryant inbox. I do want to talk a little bit of golf today. I think we almost have to, even though that's not in the Sunday Sermons wheelhouse, or even, quite frankly, the bumper-to-bumper wheelhouse as well. I've got a Vikings-related rant that I intended to get to yesterday that we didn't, and that we'll try to include in the discussion on today's show as well. I've got some NBA nuggets. I've got to talk about Tim Conley. Is he headed from one Western Conference franchise to another? Runs the Denver Nuggets basketball operation now, apparently in talks this weekend with Glenn Taylor. What has happened to your Minnesota Lynx? That may come up before this program is indeed wrapped up. And an oldie but a goodie on this show. In fact, we're going to come back with it next. Under the classification of, I tried to warn you, but many of you just wouldn't listen. That's next.
A Fan.
I threw out this question to the audience, BoothaCafan.com, Bradshaw and Brian inbox. What in sports, across the sports spectrum, annoys you more than any other signal that we tend to see in games? What would it be? What's the thing that happens over and over again that a player might do? I guess you could say a coach might do. That it just has you rolling your eyes in agony. For me, the answer is simple. It is, in NBA games, there's a closely contested play in which a player on one team is whistled for committing a foul against another player. Or there is a battle for a ball before it goes out, as it goes out of bounds. And the officials make the call. It's the home team's ball or it's the road team's ball. At which point, the team that doesn't get the ball call, or the player who is called for committing a foul, does what? He raises his, well, I guess if he's right-handed, his right hand, or left hand, his left hand into the air and does that obnoxious circular motion, which is to say, review, got to review it, let's review it, it's wrong, it's a travesty. I can't stand it. And it's all part of a larger issue, which I'm hearing more and more from the big-time national analysts. You know what they say? Too many stoppages. That wasn't a flagrant. Why are we even bothering with that? There's no flow. Basketball is a game of about flow when it's going good. And I just sit back on my barca and chuckle. Because I tried to warn you. Those of you out there who describe yourself as the we got to get it right terrorists. Well, you don't describe yourself as that. I describe you as the terrorist part. Who literally thinks so much is at stake. Got to get it right. No matter what it takes. No matter how long the game drags, we've got to get it right. And in that vein, Noble on its front end, what do we have? We have madness. We have way too many stoppages. And so we're back to a belief I've had for a long time. If I'm a commissioner where I don't have a vested interest in any one team, or any one team winning or losing, not a fan, not a member of that team, but a commissioner, what is my job? My job is, how can we make this game the best it can be? And the answer is flow. Is even at the risk of calls occasionally being missed, we lose so much in those stoppages that if I'm, you know, I got, if I'm doing the balancing act, I'm going to balance, I'm going to tilt in the way of keep the game going. Now, does hockey get slowed down as much as basketball? Where are we on the, because we have more stoppages than we used to.
Well, nothing.
But how
gets,
bad is it?
Nothing gets slowed down as much as basketball with constant fouling, and the last 2 minutes are usually a half hour long. But no, there's offside reviews, there's goalie interference reviews. But here's, and I am, I'll say it, I'm a part of the get it right
crowd.
You
are, because you're so vested in your team winning or losing. That's your problem.
Well, that's going to be a problem for a long time. That's just how it is.
Yeah.
But no, I mean, if it were me, if I'm Dee Nevison and I just had Kirill out there for 2 minutes and we spend 2 minutes on a goaltender interference or an offside review, I get Kirill for a free shift right afterwards because he just was rested for 2 minutes. So I'm okay with it as far as that goes.
Strategically, yes.
Strategically, yes.
But I'm talking about aesthetically. I don't think any of it. And look, I get it. We're a prisoner. We're not going to go back because the technology is available and it's too good. And we got, what's better than 4K? Is it? Do we have 8K now? Does 8K exist?
whatever K it is,
or 16K, whatever K it is, we have all these tools. We have abilities to slow things down, and not only slow them down, but still have crystal clear view of them. That we're not going to go back to a day where replay is outlawed. But I'll continue to adhere to my consistent position, which is none of it is helpful to the game. That, believe it or not, the occasional blown call is better in a given game than slowing down all of the games and destroying, in some cases, flat out destroying flow in several games as well. And it's just comical to me and amusing to me to hear it more and more now from people who I'm guessing in the past were the same ones who said, oh, we've got all this technology here, we've got to get the thing right. But what they left out was what we tried to warn about, is that once you start the clock on this, it never stops. The idea of, well, no, we just mean when it's a really crucial call at the end of games, that no longer matters. It keeps getting broadened out. What's the end of games? How many minutes is it? Well, that call is just as big earlier in the game as the other call might be. And so you're left with, I think, a trail of action that ends up being uninspired, or it just feels like we got 2 good minutes and then we got 4 minutes of this nonsense. Then we're going to try to get back to 2 good minutes. And if in the end, in getting it right, you hurt the aesthetic of the game, which is the most important to me, it's the most important thing, then I think it's a loss. I think it's a net loss, even if it means people losing their minds about the occasional bad call. Somehow, every sport survived bad calls. In fact, some of them became almost part of the lore. And I don't know where that line is, but all I know is that because it's been opened up, and now, literally, like I said, players are conditioned. That's what they do. And in fact, not only do they do it, they do it 80% of the time when they're wrong. Why? Because it's hard for people to be objective about their own fouls. You know what I'm saying? It's like, how many times have we seen that the smartest coaches don't listen to the players? The smartest coaches they go to the whoever they have in charge of looking at replays, and you have the most important thing about that person is he or she has to be honest. No matter what that team wants to hear, that coach wants to hear, that player wants to believe on the court, you need somebody to say, no, it's not worth messing with. Players are not ever we see it all the time. How often do players, yeah, that was a foul. Yeah, I did that. You're exactly right. It's just not in the nature of people. And I just hate when players, we reach a point when players are conditioned to do this over and over again because they've seen everybody else do it on TV, and that's what you're supposed to do. And you got that little, like I said, your index finger, you're just whirling it around. Like, got to look at it. Every time it happens, I'm wounded because it takes away from the actual game itself. It should be about the game, the players competing, coaches making decisions, action, not stoppages. And the other one that is related to it is, because here's what happens. The officials themselves, they also are human. They get drawn into this where they get worn down. And so on potential flagrant calls that aren't even close to flagrant, well, we better take a look at it because you know what? We looked at the last one, and that affected the other team. So if we don't look at it this time, then we got a problem, right? And so they end up looking at plays that aren't even worth looking at either, and that also adds a stoppage. So you have a momentum in which everybody becomes prisoner to the cameras and to replay and to getting it right to such an extent that you lose. You may win the battle, but you lose the war. And you at some point, you can't even see what you're losing each time you're thinking you're doing the right thing by trying to get it right.
Well, let's go back. Let's have an example. Opening night, Minnesota Wild this last year, they're playing the Jets at home. They get scored an empty netter on themselves.
Okay.
The Jets score an empty netter. Hang on. So it was a two-goal lead at that point. Hang on. That guy was clearly offsides. They review it. He is offsides. Right. His whole skate's offsides.
Okay.
Comes back. The Wild tie the game, end up winning the game in overtime. For the sake of flow, even though he was clearly offsides,
yes.
And it was, that's, I don't like to say getting it right. I like to say what actually happened.
Right.
You know, did the hand get under the glove when you're sliding into second?
Yes.
Or did he get tagged? I just want what actually happened to be the result of, because I think for the sake of flow, the Wild would have lost that game.
That's a fair point. In theory, what you're saying makes sense. What I'm saying is that in reality, in my opinion, as counterintuitive as it sounds, because you picked one, but there's always another, it's an endless array, and not all of them, by the way, are anywhere near as clear as you say that one was. A lot of them are fuzzier, even with 8K, it's fuzzier, and yet, because this is what we're conditioned, and because, frankly, fans are never objective about their own teams. We've talked about this with Vikings fans forever, how we always get jobbed by the officials. We've talked about it with the Wolves. We never get the calls. And what fans who have a vested interest tend to do is remember the calls that, rightly, your team sometimes got jobbed out of, but to never remember the calls that you got in your favor. It's just the nature of it. Oh, yeah, all right. Well, yeah, well, about time. But we should get a couple of those. So the game is rigged if you are not objective because you have a rooting interest in your team. And so you're going to remember only the ones that worked against you, and you're rarely, maybe deep in your mind, you're going to be willing to admit, yeah, we got three good calls there in that period. But you're not going to make a big deal of it because in your mind you're going to say, well, that's for the other side to fight their own battle. My job is to just fight the battle of our team and go from there. Booth at KFAN.com is the Bradshaw and Bryant inbox. We will mix in phone calls a little bit later. Don't forget, as I mentioned, Kevin Kernan to talk Major League Baseball, one of our favorites. He will be with us at about 9:55 today as well. And if you have your own dumb, most annoying thing in sports that you can that you run into, that you observe, that bug you, please let us know. via the Bradshaw and Bryant inbox as well. That's Booth, B-O-O-T-H, at KFAN.com. A couple emails have come in on the issue of the Twins, whether they're buying the Twins' success or not. We will include those in the discussion. Is this the end of the Tiger Woods run as one of the greatest names, not just in golf, but in sports, period? Did we see that before our eyes play out on Saturday in very emotional fashion? We'll discuss.
On the Fan.
Before we talk a little golf, don't forget Kevin Kernan to talk Major League Baseball at the top of the hour. Sunday sermons followed by Cake Show at 11. Part-time guy Brett Blakemore had an interesting nugget he found, Minnesota Wild related, that I'm guessing the general manager of the club will find quite amusing. What's that? What's this all about?
Yeah, probably not. So the Wild did their, since the season's over, they had their Paint the Ice. I'm guessing it's a season ticket holder event where you can go and you paint murals or whatever you want on the ice. And I saw some opas and some moose on the ice. But in big, bold letters, right next to the red line, was re-sign Fiala.
I love it.
Yeah. So
I love it.
Probably a 20-foot mural.
Oh, yeah. That's too good. That's juicy right there.
I believe that's the they on the ice.
It could very well be the they that Bill Guerin was referring to. No question about that. One follow-up on replay before we talk a little bit about not my favorite game, the game of golf. Let's just say an unnamed source with some views regarding the ongoing replay issue. This whole mess started when we decided to put tenths on basketball scoreboard clocks. Get rid of tenths. Two, we're screwed because TV pays them, and TV loves endless replays because they make it even more important. That's true. Sad but true. And three, and you'll love this, I think, Brett. NHL has only good replay idea. If you ask and you're wrong, it's a penalty.
I don't hate that.
That's a fair point. Yeah. That part, at least, I think, makes it a little bit more digestible as a concept for sure. More on the Twins, if not with Kernan, after Kernan as well. There's a couple of good emails that have come in on that subject on whether we trust the Minnesota Twins at this point. And there's going to be, believe me, given who they're playing and what their record is likely to be at the end of this stretch, there are going to be a lot of Twins cheerleaders out there going to be saying, what's wrong with winning? Well, what's with you guys? What do you need to see? But I think it's still more complicated than that. Tiger Woods withdrew from a major for the first time in his professional career yesterday, Tulsa, Oklahoma. He shot a 9 over 79 in round three, then told the PGA of America, I'm out. He was asked if days like this, high pain, high score, made him question the process it takes to play and if he would tee it up on Sunday. Well, I'm sore. I know that is for a fact. We'll do some work and see how it goes. And he obviously chose to withdraw. Withdraw, I should say. He was 21 shots behind the leader. And now the question comes, what does he show? Does he indeed show up for the U.S. Open as well? And I don't know what the answer is. I don't have that many golf-related sources, but it was a new threshold that was passed on in the tournament yesterday for him. For the record, it wasn't his worst in a major, 81 in the 2002 British Open. In huge winds and bitter cold that ended his hopes for a Grand Slam. Number of other players asked. By the way, Woods did, I think he spoke to a pool reporter briefly. He did not speak to reporters after the fact. And, you know, I know there's probably people out there saying, well, why are we even spending any much time on this any longer? Because it's fairly clear that he's not what he was. There's a lot of other golfers to comment on and to pay attention to. And I think the answer should be obvious. There's only one Tiger Woods. And as much as I've chided my weekday producer, Garzy, who, you know, if Tiger birdies two straight holes on a Friday to get to within 16 strokes, he's ready to say, he's lurking. Tiger's lurking. Yeah, I rolled my eyes at some of that, the sort of inability to sort of face reality. But guess what? That's the nature of how it's always going to be with certain athletes who elevate themselves to a place that no one else has ever gotten to. And Tiger's in that classification. It's as long as he's out there. And I don't know that, like I said, it's going to be that much longer. But as long as he's out there, no matter the situation, there's always going to be extra interest. And I don't resent that, because over a period of decades, he's earned it. Now, that doesn't mean you shouldn't be allowed to be honest about where he's at and to stop pretending that he's closer than he really is, because there's a lot of that goes on. But I think that's the wishful thinking that happens. The analogy for me in sports is Ali. Muhammad Ali had elevated himself to that place where no matter how, in a given time in his career, vulnerable he looked, there were way too many of us who selfishly said, keep going after it, Muhammad, in that hope that somehow he could recreate some of the old magic, which, by the way, eventually he kind of did. And it was probably fool's gold, but that's what we believed. And it's just because some athletes have you thinking those sorts of thoughts, and it's actually a compliment to what they've accomplished. But it sure looks like, I'll defer to the golf community, but it sure looks like this thing is coming to a close. In part two, because, you know, regardless of, in this case, he wasn't playing very good golf, but beyond that, there was the question of literally how he could move with the leg. And whether that in of itself, no matter what quality level of golf he was playing, would end up making his decision for him. And the sense you get is that no matter how much progress he's made, that continues to be a rather significant and large issue. You consider yourself, are you a golf guy? Are you a Tiger guy?
I love going out and swinging.
Okay.
You could not pay me to watch.
Any golf.
I've tried, man. And it just.
Tried to watch?
Yeah. It just doesn't, I don't know. Just doesn't do it for me.
Well,
so
I'll say this. I don't watch anywhere, like, I don't obviously watch anywhere near as much as the Noon to 3 host. And probably most people on the station. I don't know. I don't know how many other people watch golf. I am, if it's a good close, well, there were two exceptions. And I remember writing about this as a non-golf guy. It went in the Tiger heyday, I would pay attention in a way that I wouldn't for any other golfer, because it felt different. The voltage was up. But I will say, occasionally, if it's a really close tournament on a Sunday and it's being covered right, you know, the one advantage golf has, TV golf has, is they can quickly cut from one important shot to another important shot. And it feels like often there's less lag time. You know, there's less, we got to wait. How long do we have to wait till the next big shot is made? Well, obviously they can splice those together because they can move them around. They know how to do that. And I will do that some, but I don't do it. I will admit, I don't do it. It's rare for me. For you, it's never.
Well, you know what I was just thinking about? I think I struggle with individual sports. I have to have a vested connection or interest, or, you know, if there was somebody from, you know, if there was a Minnesotan, or if there was someone from my hometown in Des Moines, yes, that was, yes, making a push, I'd probably watch it.
Yeah.
But it's, I got to have that, you know, there's other people in the building that are NASCAR, diehard NASCAR fans. Yeah. I can't get into it because I don't, I don't know. I don't have a team. There's not a, you know, well, Minnesota speedsters that I can watch.
But you're explaining why Tiger was as big as he became, yeah, because that became, Tiger was the team for a lot of people who otherwise couldn't care less about golf and that felt that something different, obviously because he was an all-time great, something different was going on and that everything felt different and the crowds reacted differently and the atmosphere was different and the team, everything about it seemed different. That became the team, regardless of whether you knew him or had any other reason to root for him, became what you're looking at. And I do think that's what a lot of people need. They need some kind of, they have to feel connected unless they're hardcore golf fans. And, you know, some of those are out there as well, for sure. Let's go to top of the hour pause in. Let's talk baseball with the irascible one, Kevin Kernan, who's covered baseball for many, many years in the New York tabloids. These days, he lives in Florida, writes for ball9.com, and he clearly has made as his mission the rest of his career torturing the nerds, the baseball nerds, as he, identifies them, start to finish. So you'll hear that word a lot. You'll hear nerd ball a lot. And maybe we'll get his view on the latest Josh Donaldson controversy, in which White Sox manager Tony La Russa has called him racist in terms of a couple of comments that Donaldson made. It's a complicated subject. We'll try to cover that and maybe some other baseball items. Maybe Kernan can tell us why the New York Yankees are sitting there at 29-10. That's a 744 winning percentage, easily the best record in, well, I'm assuming baseball, but certainly the American.
The Fan.
You have meddled with the primal forces of nature. And you will atone.
Hour number two, Sunday Sermons. Guardsy's in the house. He'll take over 11 o'clock for the cake show between 11 and 1 o'clock. We'll be here until then, and now pleased to be joined by one of our favorite ball guys. Kevin Kernan's been covering baseball. Well, he's been covering sports for a long time. But these days he writes for a website called ball9.com, and he's been on with us intermittently, occasionally for quite some time. And he is kind enough to join us via the Connecticut Water Systems Hotline this Sunday morning. I assume you're in Florida, and I assume it's a very pleasant morning, correct?
Actually, I'm in New Jersey.
Oh.
I've been rotating through. I'm doing with Ball 9, Dan, this summer. I've been doing a series called My Baseball Summer. So I've been getting on the road here and there and not going to the typical major league ballparks, but, you know, little things. Like a few weeks ago, I was in Port St. Lucie and did something about what the Silver Sluggers and people that they have, which old people. And,
yes.
And actually, I came up and did something on my Little League. A real quick Little League story. This puts all of the Little League parents in perspective. You'll find this on Ball 9. I wrote it last week. I went back to my old Little League, and you're talking, you know, early 60s.
Sure.
My brother was a big-time hitter. My brother George. My father was a cop. He was a sergeant at the time. Pulled the police car up. Had his white shirt on because the sergeants wore white shirts. He was a typical loud father in the early 60s. My brother fouls the ball off. My father yells, "Straighten it out." You know how those fathers did it back
then. Yes.
True story. I'm not making any of this up. It's a true story. You can look it up. It was in the newspapers even. My brother proceeds, next pitch, it's a line drive, hits my father in the mouth, knocks out most of his teeth.
Oh, man. Oh, that's...
My father learned his lesson. And by the way, where my father was standing was along the first base line, and it was a different world back then, you know,
sure.
Short fence, 3 feet high fence. Now they got about a 12-foot high fence.
And
so
nets.
That doesn't
yeah.
happen anymore.
No, those days are long gone. That's a great story. I got a lot of ground I want to try to cover with you. Some of it's Ball 9 related. But I do want to start with the Yankees. A gaudy record. They're off to an incredibly good start now. And so why are they, what is it, 29-10? Why do they have such a gaudy record?
Yeah, it's a good start to as a question as well. And quite frankly, I know they won't admit to this, but they've been doing the things that I've been begging them to do for the last couple of years. They got a shortstop that can catch the ball. They got a catcher that can catch the ball. They put the leadership thing into Aaron Judge's hands. I had a great relationship with Judge and his family to this day. I spoke to his mom last week. Matter of fact, we texted back and forth. He took on the pressure of being the guy and really betting on himself. And here's the key: Judge, Rizzo, DJ LeMahieu, great leadership. Gleyber Torres goes back to second base. He relaxes. He becomes a good player again. So they have leadership on the field. Rizzo's a good defender. They've improved their defense. Pitchers are so dumb, they're still pitching them away, and they just hit the ball to Yankee Stadium. They hit it out there or on the road. They don't, for some reason, for the most part, this era of pitchers, they're so afraid. I talked to a scout and a talent evaluator about this the other day. They're afraid to pitch inside. And the Yankees have made that adjustment hitting-wise. They have smart hitters. They're playing good defense. And the bullpen is, as one front office person told me, it's incredibly, incredibly good. The different arm slots, they picked up a small point, but this is why you have me on. Michael King has become basically their best reliever. They got him in the Cooper trade with Miami, a very minor trade. But they had, I can't mention the scout, but they had a scout who knew the Miami system inside and out. He recommended this kid. They had him work on a few things. He worked with Corey Kluber in 2021, who helped almost as a pitching coach. He gave him the curveball and, he gave him some other things. And so now they have depth in the lineup. They have depth in the rotation a little bit. Still a little shaky here and there.
Sure.
But they have the deepest bullpen in baseball. And they're on a mission. They want to beat you. They want to beat you. This team, Judge's attitude has taken over the complete team. And I think we said it at the time, the trade would be good for both teams with the Yankees. It was good for the Yankees because they cleaned up their defense.
Yep.
And it was good for Gary to get out of town. And that's why they're actually playing. You know what they have? I wrote about it the other day on Ball 9. They've outsmarted the nerds. They're a nerd team up top, but not on the field. The players are not nerds. These players play the game right way. Perfect example. The Orioles move left field back. It's ridiculous what they did. But Mike Elias thinks he can change, make his team good by changing the field instead of getting good players. And so Judge hits that ball off the wall. The other day, I don't know if you people saw it, but it was a rocket off the wall. Would have been out in every other ballpark. He adjusts. Two of the next three at bats, he looks away. They pitch him away. He hits home runs to right center and center field. So that's baseball. I mean, I hate to make it so simple,
sure,
but the Yankees are playing baseball. And some other team, I got to credit the Twins. The Twins are playing some baseball. So it's good to see. The teams that are figuring out that it's baseball again, are really having some success.
Let's stay with the Yankees for a second. By the way, one of the more recent pieces you write, under the headline "Don't Fence Me In," it starts out with that anecdote about Aaron Judge,
right.
And you didn't disappoint me because in the lead, the sentence ended with "showing up the nerds." So you're right on schedule there, and that's I think what you were referring to. So. What do you make of the controversy that broke out yesterday between Tim Anderson and Josh Donaldson that got very ugly? I think now apparently Major League Baseball is investigating it. The Jackie Robinson comment, Anderson is calling it disrespectful. I think La Russa went further and said it was racist. And as you know, Donaldson's saying, well, he's called himself that in an SI story a couple of years ago, and it didn't seem to bother him before, but it bothered him yesterday, and I apologize if it does. What do we make of this thing?
Well, I think that's a good answer by Donaldson. I got to be honest. I think it's good. I don't think Donaldson meant anything racist by it, to be quite frank. Being called Jackie Robinson is, I think, to me, it's a tribute. Now, we all, and Dan, we've been around ball players enough. There's a lot of ball player humor. Unfortunately, you got to be very careful what you say. Would I say something like that? No. But it was said. I think I thought he handled it well. I think they need to move on. I think there's too much going on in the world where we can't get distracted and cause things to make them get worse. I understand where Tim Anderson's coming from.
Yeah.
And don't forget that team isn't playing well too.
No, though they've been dominated by the Yankees. Right, two straight
dominated
weekends.
By the Yankees. Yeah. And that's when I get back to my point about the Yankees playing baseball with those that leadership intact. And notice I think Donaldson is a player that, you know, he's a fiery, emotional player who can sometimes say things that rub people the wrong way.
Yeah, he's done that for a long time.
Whatever.
Yeah,
even right. His own clubhouse. So,
100%.
So, you know,
we had some experience with that here too. Yeah,
yes,
exactly.
Yeah, you know what I'm talking about. Yeah. So I think hopefully he learned a lesson. But again, I want this world to come together a little bit, and I want people to be able to maybe you should be able to get a mulligan here and there too in life. And you know, I don't think Donaldson meant anything disrespectful from it. I think his answer was good, and I hope Tim Anderson him can share. It's a similar today. Wasn't there a situation in San Francisco with a coach
yes.
calling out another coach?
Right.
And that was really silly. You know, he was basically getting on the coach for something else, maybe running up the score or something. But people, in my book, are way too sensitive nowadays.
Generally speaking, let's broaden it out a little bit, because all the numbers that I've read and paid attention to indicate, obviously, offense is down, batting mm-hmm. average is down, et cetera. So what is this about? Is it pitching is better? Is it you think where do the nerds factor into this? Do you think it hurts the quality of play that offense is down, at least so far, to the degree it is? Or what's it all about?
It's all about being stubborn. The nerd based teams are being tremendously stubborn. I did a piece today, and I would recommend everybody read. I got the team USA National Baseball team coach from IMG talking about don't be a GPS coach.
Yes.
In other words,
I was going to really, get to that. Yeah.
I mean, yeah. Okay, well, I won't go into it any further. But the good hitters, and again, I'm pointing back to the Twins. All you have to do is look at the highlights from yesterday's game. Twins are going the other way. They're taking what pitchers are. These pitchers are giving you so much. Shoot the single to left field. The Yankees are hitting the ball the other. Doubles are always one of my keys for offenses. I especially two out doubles. And, you know, and the Twins are third in doubles. So what's happening is the nerd pitching, everything's an iPad now. So you can outthink the pitcher because you can, he'll work you away and they'll play you to, they'll play you in a shift. So nothing makes any sense. So just take what you are given and you will have success. So most of the teams are still doing the old way, big swings, big strikeouts.
Mm-hmm.
That's not baseball. That's home run derby. So smarter teams are playing baseball, and they're the ones having success. If you break away the good teams, with even the Dodgers for a while. Here's another thing. I don't think your listeners know about this, and this is very important. The Dodgers have been using this system called Win Reality for about 5 years now. It's a virtual reality system. I think it was created by some of the people in the Rockies organization years ago, Dan O'Dowd, who used to be the GM. And it basically it simulates different pitches, and you can get prepared for it. So these hitters that are going the other way are more prepared for this stuff. They're using some of this virtual reality thing, because I'm not totally against new things
mm-hmm.
as long as it works in an old-fashioned way. So that's what's going on. The pitchers, yes, the pitchers throw harder. They don't have the command. The good teams are taking advantage of not having that command. And Carlos Correa is a great example. He set a great example for that Twins team, and they're following his example. So good players will still be good. The Correas, the Judges, those
yeah.
kind of people. Tim Anderson, you know, he's going to get his team right, I think, eventually. But, so it's a combination of nerd pitching coaches who, and I know for a fact that a lot of pitchers have told me, you know, that I've spoken to, some of them totally ignore it now and go their own way. They've also been the real one key, though, why hitting has been better for certain teams is because they're taking advantage of so many bad sliders. I've never seen so many dumb, bad sliders that I'm seeing in the major leagues right now. But the teams that are still doing it the old way, the old new way, I should say, they're struggling. They're the ones hitting in that 230 range because they're not even trying for base hits, and there's no risk. There's no accountability. They just go swing from the butt. And if you hit it, you hit it. If you don't, you walk back to the bench and, go get them, boys. Next time.
Kevin Kernan writes for ball9.com, joining us on this Sunday morning. So when you write, as you have, I think this is your most recent piece, don't be a GPS coach.
Yes.
What exactly does that mean?
Well, a GPS coach doesn't guide you. And because what does a GPS coach do? He's like a GPS. He just tells you what to do. You don't learn it. You just follow the directions. Like if you're going to your sister-in-law's house for a holiday and they live far away, you just follow the directions. Mm-hmm. You don't really know how to get there.
Yeah.
Being a real coach teaches a player how do you get there? How do you get to that position? Small little example. Batting practice. Instead of having batting practice where everything is pull side heavy, you set up a cone in on the pull side, left field, say for right-handers, and you force them to hit the middle of the field. They learn their own swings. They learn how to manipulate the bat. They learn how to hit the holes. Lewis Arise is a good example of that. And so GPS coaches say, take something off the iPad, take something off the, off sure. the data. And I won't mention the name, but I know there was a coach in one organization who actually said to his pitchers, this was in a minor league, I think he was in a minor league situation, and I'm not going to say who it was or what team, but he said, hey, mechanics fix cars. I'm not a mechanic. That's the wrong approach.
Yeah.
You have to be a mechanic as a coach. You have to show them what they're doing, what they're right, what they're wrong. You have to coach. You just can't be a GPS machine just dictating a way to go without any thought or any process. So that's in a nutshell, you got to offer balance. Really, it's that simple.
Well,
you got to create one last point on that.
Sure.
You got to create problems. And I thought Dave Turgeon, the guy I interviewed in this piece, I thought he said it best when he said, baseball is a problem solving game.
Mm-hmm.
You got to create problem solvers. A good baseball player is a problem solver.
Yeah. Another way to put that is you at your best, as challenging as it could be, is you're trying to teach them how to think. So ultimately, they're making
exactly.
the adjustments because you've trained them. Here's the things you should pay attention to that puts them in a better position to actually then make the adjustments themselves.
Yeah, and let's take it to football. We all love football, right? What do we love in football? We love when Tom Brady or a quarterback.
Yeah, right.
And that's been the problem sometimes with the Vikings through the years. They have quarterbacks that really don't think that well.
Yes.
But if your quarterback and wide receiver suddenly see something, get on the same page, football is not just data processing. It's creative problem solving. And that's what you have to be as a baseball player. And that is the difference. And I had two organizational people reach out to me this morning, and this column just came out this morning, from different organizations saying, you know what they said to me? They sent me a text, and they said, great piece. This is what I'm fighting in my organization now. Because all the nerds, the Ivy League nerds, have come out of certain areas. Now, the Ivy League nerds that make an adjustment, maybe surround themselves with a couple former players that know what they're talking about, like Budelli is a good example mm-hmm. to have around. They'll make the adjustment. But the nerds who think they're smarter than the game, that just think they can move a fence back or do this and maybe finish last four straight years and you get the draft picks and eventually works out, they're not the ones. They're the GPS nerds. So there's actually, I think I'm creating a new term now, just now. There's nerds, which is a certain level of nerds, and then there's GPS nerds, which are the worst kind.
So it's a sit now. We're actually broadening it out. We're getting more specific. There are subsections of nerds is what you're saying.
Exactly.
Yeah, that's it.
And they, you know, there's so many of them now because they get each other jobs in every organization. They're never going to go away. So that's why I wrote the column about you got to outsmart the nerds. And I know for a fact Judge got a big kick out of that because that's exactly what he does. And it really, the reality is because they haven't played the game, they haven't been in those experiences. So they want to do one small, because you know me, I'm all about examples. This guy was in an organization for 25 years. Well, the nerds came in. They're having. He's gone on the four practice fields in spring training. Everybody's swinging from their butt, and he went up to the head nerd and went up and said, "Hey, I see what we're doing here. What happens when we have to hit the ball the other way, or what happens when we have to lay down a sacrifice bunt?" Which the Twins did, I believe, yesterday. By the way,
that's correct.
You know what the nerd response is? Typical nerd, know it all. We'll just do it. They think things can just be done. They can't just be done. They got to be practiced. It all comes back to fundamentals. And in this article, we talked about the fundamentals of Jeter foot play, of Jeter following the play and Giambi not sliding. And I thought Dave Turgeon made a great point because he talked to one of the coaches of the A's, and the coach of the A's told him years later, he said, "You know how much money not sliding cost me? Hundreds of thousands of dollars, because you get all that money when you advance." So there's real repercussions
yeah.
for being a nerd.
One other state of baseball questions. From time to time, we've talked about this, and I know it's not a new subject to you. The concern that a lot of people have had regarding the number of teams that don't seem to be competing in any kind of a meaningful way,
horrible.
And what that does to the game itself. I mean, in terms of the numbers of teams you would put in that classification, is it down from what it was? It was, I mean, the good example, the Twins just played Oakland the other day, and it was just like, it just felt like a joke, the whole thing. And I know their situation is a little unique. They don't want to be there. Apparently, nobody wants to go, the whole bit. But where are we at regarding that issue? Why does that seem to continue to saddle baseball, and what can be done about it?
It's getting worse, and the solution is simple. Revamp the draft. You know, don't make the last team get the first draft pick. You know, maybe do it middle of the pack, or do a lottery, or do if it were me, you know what I would do? I would give them a couple years' notice, and I would say, if you finish first, you get the first draft pick. That would stop it immediately. It ends right now, because there's a player, Elijah Green, who plays for the IMG Academy. He's going to be a great player. Eventually, you get enough players like the Astros did, and also the previous administration of the Astros built some. They brought in the George Springer types and things like that. You're going to be okay. So they think that that actually works. And because they're dealing with nerd owners who deal with money and numbers, that's how they do their business, and they can't be faulted. They think that's the path to success. And I think it's getting worse. I think it's getting worse. I think it's at least half the teams now, I would say. And that's what makes it great for teams like the Yankees. They can just – and we see with the Mets. The Mets, will the Mets overcome the pitching injuries they got?
Right.
You know, I've talked about all these injuries forever. They've made all these rule changes. They do limit pitch limits. And yet a guy like Max Scherzer gets hurt throwing a baseball. He gets hurt doing what he does, pulling an oblique. Something's wrong there. So will the Mets overcome those injuries? We don't know, but they are trying to do things baseball-wise. So they're one of the teams that are trying to take advantage of the other team's weaknesses, all the other teams. And I'm not just talking about the A's. And I was out with somebody in the winter with somebody from the A's. I was out with him and having dinner. And he told me that the payroll was going to be about 30 to 40 million. And I couldn't believe it.
Yeah.
To me, it should almost be you're much more broad sports wise. It almost should be soccer, where you bring a team up from another division.
Been suggested. So yes. I've heard that.
I would do that.
Well, it almost, you know, it's radical, but you're almost left with no other choice because it's just become too easy to, under the guise of, well, you know, that's what the best teams do. They bottom out and then they build. And you can keep yourself meaningless and irrelevant for 6 years that way. And if you have enough teams doing it, it's bad. It is bad for the game.
And then you make a mistake, and you make some bad draft picks, and now you're bad for 10 years. Like I always say about the Orioles, you know, they had some players who are coming around a little bit and stuff like that, but they don't think ahead. A perfect example. Yeah, it's better for their pitchers for left field be the you know, the Grand Canyon, but what pitchers are going to go there if they know their team's not scoring runs?
Yeah.
So they don't the nerds just don't connect the dots, and that's why they're nerds. They're good at one problem. You give them that problem, you lock them in a room, you give them some food, water, and they fix the problem, but then you take that problem to fix a bigger problem. They can't fix bigger problems. They're not problem solvers, and isn't that the irony of the situation? They're dictated by their GPS, which I love now. I'm going to say it all the time.
Let me ask you this. Do you buy the idea that's been passed along that there should be that baseball now almost is required to have a salary cap? There's no salary cap, obviously, but a salary minimum, that's part of the
floor.
Issue? A floor?
Yes. Yeah, there should be a floor. No doubt there should be a floor. And one of the other things you can do is just take the baseball team that's not trying to win and put all their games on Apple TV. Then nobody would know about it.
That's another whole issue for another day. Ball9.com. By the way, we got to get to the podcast, too. You keep broadening it out. You keep expanding.
Yes.
Now you've got a podcast. What's it called? How can people get it? And what's it all about?
Yeah, we're you can find podcasts where they're everywhere. You know, Spotify.
Sure.
I just go to Spotify. It's simple, but it's called Coach and Kernan. And I'm not making money on this right now, Dan. Sometimes we do things because we love them. But I know from 45 years in the business, all the business too, basketball, as you well know, football. But I know so many coaches, so many people that are being pushed aside. So it's called Coaching Kernan. I do it with another guy who is a college coach. He runs all kinds of youth clinics. So we're trying to get to the young player, high school, youth league, college, and show him how to really work to make his game better. One small example, I had we have a scout on, which we won't name because we don't want to get him in trouble, but we refer to him as Bull, and he's tremendously honest. But he was a former pitcher, very successful, until he blew his arm out. And he talked, one little example was he talked about how to make the plate move as a pitcher, and he gave examples of that. So you can expand that plate, you know, from 17 inches to whatever, and there's way to, so we really give in-depth, real coaching, real information, and it's not out there anywhere else. And we also have a strength and conditioning guy who lays it all out. And his biggest problem with baseball is these guys are all getting hurt doing baseball things, like I pointed out before. So I didn't know this. Like, I asked him about the oblique injuries, and he says, well, that's been a continuing series in America. And this guy is so smart about this. He told me something I never knew. In World War I, when we had snipers in war, they would squat. That was the sniper position. But through the years, as a society, we lost strength in those abdominal muscles, and then it became a prone position. So we deal with things that nobody's talking about, because everybody's opinionated, everybody is just throwing stuff out there, or it's betting. We deal with real-time information for real people. You know, this is real coaching.
Outstanding conversation,
Coaching Kernan.
Coaching Kernan, and available everywhere you get your podcasts. I'll look to see if it's on iHeartMedia. I bet it is as well. Thanks for
if
the time.
It is, we'll get it there.
Let's get it for sure, because that's a really nice big platform you. My friend, as always. Good to catch up. We'll stay in touch. Thanks, Kevin.
Always a pleasure, Dan. Thanks.
Kevin Kernan helping us out. Ball9.com, a really good baseball website. Kind of a contrarian website, one could say. You don't even have to agree with all of it. I don't ask that you do. But I love that he's opinionated. I love that he's passionate about it. And I love that he gives us as much time as he does. We're going to have a short segment coming up regarding a sports controversy that I can almost guarantee you have not thought 1 minute about. But given how juicy it is.
The Fan.
Sunday Sermons brought to you by JTR Roofing.
He went, Kernan went into double digits on using the word nerd. In fact, if you were monitoring, if you were doing a nerd counter, let us know the final tally after Kevin Kernan's most recent appearance. Emailer Brian, I think, was the first guy to offer up some insight there. Let me see if I can find his email. Where did it go? Oh, three nerds before 10 a.m. Yeah, he got in early. He did not disappoint in that regard, and I'm certain got into double digits. And in fact, Brian emailed back later to say, indeed, he was drunk, and it's not even 10:15 in the morning. Are you aware of a sports controversy, a scandal involving a Minnesota-based sports team that was caught in the middle of it as recently as yesterday?
No, I am dying to hear what, because the tease was masterful.
Our Minnesota Vixen were in action against the St. Louis somethings. I'm not sure what they're called. You can look it up. And by the way, this was a team we dominated in April 41-6. We're playing them in St. Louis. We're down 17-6 at the half.
The St. Louis Slam.
The Slam. But we mount a comeback in the second half. We're losing 20-18 after three quarters. But you say, 2 points, got a full quarter to catch them? We were not given a chance to catch them. Do you know why? I guess the skies darkened, became more difficult to see, and there was a refusal to turn on the lights.
No!
School officials or Slam officials or whoever's in charge of the lights refused to turn them on at this particular ballpark, so the game was called on account of darkness Vixen lose 20-18.
No!
Because I guess they didn't. They said, well, are you going to pay the bill? They said, well, I don't know if we can pay the bill. No lights turned on. And they said, ball game's done. It's a three-quarter game. It's in the rule books. I don't even know if it is in the rule books that you can call a game that way. The Vixen lose on account of darkness, making, in a sense, one could say, sports history.
Well, if they would have waited for the lights to warm up, and it would have ruined the flow of the game.
I guess, there you go.
Yeah.
I need that. This is all, of course, courtesy of our Vixen, I guess you could say, correspondent, Dan Winnesota, who's outraged, bitter about the whole thing. I think he called it ridiculous. It does seem a little crazy to me, but I don't know, like I said, was it, well, all right, if we turn the lights on, that's going to cost. These teams have shoestring budgets. This is not a sport that's got a lot of extra money to play with right now. Nevertheless, you'd like to think if you're going to start a game at a ballpark that presumably has lights, there should be a willingness to put them on, if necessary, to allow people to complete the actual ball game.
Do we know what time kick was?
I don't know what time. It's a good question. My guess is...
to start playing games at noon, if this is going
to
be a problem.
You're right. That'd be the other way to go. Now, I don't know if like storms were coming in and it got really dark that way. I have no idea about visibility. But anyway, it's a different kind of calendar of calamity item that, first of all, I guess you lose to a team that you destroyed not that long ago. But beyond that, you don't have a chance to continue your comeback because you'd cut it to two because they announced, we're done. Not going to turn the lights on. Too expensive. Unnecessary. Or maybe it was just the Slams' way of saying, well, we're not sure we're going to be able to win the game in the fourth quarter. So apparently that was it. If we get new details on it early this week, we will pass it along to you. But that's a new way to lose. Now, I grew up on, of course, Wrigley Field, where there were no lights forever and ever and ever, and a lot of the games were indeed called because of darkness, or a second game of a doubleheader, where you get, it might be a combination of a lot of things, including storms. But in this case, I'm told there were, this is, I think, a high school stadium, but I'm told there were lights there, and maybe somebody didn't have the key. I don't know, you know, to the little hut where you turned on the lights. I have no idea, but that's a tough way to lose, is it not?
Only teams from here.
Only teams from here find ways that inventive to indeed lose. A bottom of the hour break here. What's going on? Well, we got a couple of other sports-related questions that we have not covered. I have a Vikings-related rant that will be part of our conversation as well. Then we'll turn it over to the Cake Show. Guardsy's in the house, 11 until...
On the Fan.
Minnesota coming up with a little more detail on this outrage involving the Vixen, our women's professional football team. Kickoff was supposed to be at 5, but I think there was a lightning delay, which pushed the game back later. My sources are telling me they didn't start the game earlier because a lot of the players drove down yesterday morning, not the night before. There are some, I think, limitations here just based on the financial realities that go into, at this point, this sort of league. Before we get to a couple of ancillary items that I promised to discuss, including perhaps a Vikings rant, we discussed briefly with Kernan this Tim Anderson, Josh Donaldson kerfuffle, and I want to add a couple of thoughts on it. Anderson says Donaldson made what he's describing as a disrespectful comment toward him in the first inning of Saturday's game when he asked him, "What's up, Jackie?" in reference to Jackie Robinson. Tony La Russa, the White Sox manager, post-game called the comment racist. Anderson and Donaldson did exchange words multiple times Saturday. Benches did clear in the fifth, This was during a Donaldson at bat when he was talking to the catcher, Grandal. Anderson ran in from his position to confront Donaldson. Anderson held back by teammates. Both teams issued warnings. Quote from Anderson, "I wasn't really bothering nobody today, but he made the comment and it was disrespectful, and I don't think it was called for. It's unnecessary." MLB is apparently looking into the incident. How formally, we don't know yet. Donaldson says, "Yes, I did call Anderson Jackie in the first inning." Said he was referencing a 2019 SI article in which Anderson referred to himself as today's Jackie Robinson. Donaldson and Anderson had previously joked about the interview, he said. In the interview, Anderson said, "I kind of feel like today's Jackie Robinson," referencing his desire to break the have fun barrier in baseball. That's huge to say, but it's cool, man, because he changed the game, and I feel like I'm getting to a point where I need to change the game as well. The hostility, according to, this is a story out of The Athletic, attempted to background this thing, stems back to last weekend when Donaldson and Anderson collided on an attempted pickoff tag at third. Donaldson added that he was trying to defuse the situation and that Anderson deemed that it was disrespectful this time. "We're not trying to start any brawls or anything like that." He added that he could address the situation with Anderson. Do you know if Anderson would be willing? I think he also said he was sorry if Anderson took it in the disrespectful way. There's a lot of stuff at work here, not the least of which, I think, is the White Sox are cranky because they're getting, for the second straight weekend, dominated by the Yankees. It's something we're kind of familiar with here, one could say. We can relate to that kind of dominance. And it goes back to what an emailer sent after our first segment when we were talking about my, I guess, stubbornness about not quite accepting that the Twins are as good as their record indicates to this point. It's a very small sample size, and it could be a misleading stat in a sense, but the Twins are 24-16, which is a great pace. It's 600 baseball. You're in the, I think, mid-90s in terms of how many games you win if you continue to play at that pace, whatever that's worth, and I don't think it's worth much given how few games we've played, but it's up now. It's up to 40 games. So now you're close to a fourth of the season. But there's a little tricky stat about what's your record against teams with 500, better than 500 record. And we're 2-6. And that's not very good. Now, again, that's only 8 games. The White Sox, for example, have had to play 15 games against teams with a record better than 500. Now, that includes the Twins. So sometimes that's how some of these stats can become a little misleading. But the White Sox have had a couple series with the Yankees already, back-to-back weekends. So I think that's why some of us have said, let's see where this thing goes when we do play better teams. You can have a good record without beating better teams. But the question is, what does it really mean about what you might be capable of doing in the postseason? Getting back to Donaldson. I don't know if Anderson will confirm or has confirmed that the term has been used before. I would say no matter what Anderson said in that story, I think you're crossing a line when you throw out the Jackie Robinson term. Given what that name means, that to me, and you know me, I there are many times where I say there's not as much there as people think. But in this case, I don't think you go there at all. I think it's too dangerous. I think it's not worth whatever point you're trying to make in chiding the other player. And I think it's absolutely something that it doesn't surprise me because that Donaldson likes to push the envelope. We know that. He kind of, I think, gets off on that whole deal. But I don't think it's an appropriate statement to make. And I don't blame Anderson for being bugged by it. Anderson was trying to make a specific point when he used the term about himself. Using the term about himself in that context, and we can argue about whether he should at all, given the historic nature of Jackie Robinson. But to me, that's very different than somebody else deciding, "Oh, I'm gonna play with that and manipulate it at a time when you're vulnerable already because we're kicking your butt and there's some tension here." I don't know if it's worthy of investigation. But as far as I'm concerned, Donaldson shouldn't have said it. And I think Donaldson deep down knows it, but he'll probably be too stubborn to admit it. Minnesota Lynx, quick nugget here. We lost again last night. We got dominated 94-78. We're 1-6. We're not off to a very good start at all, and it continues to appear that we got some significant issues. And I know we started 0-4 last year and recovered at least enough to get in the playoffs. It didn't really lead anywhere. The season is so short that they're already kind of close to a danger zone here. And all it reminds me of is talent matters. Coaching matters. The best coaches take advantage and utilize the best talent, which I think Cheryl Reeve most assuredly has done. But you got to have players. And it's fairly clear we don't have enough players. And there's a lot of reasons for that. It's complicated. But I'm starting to think that maybe reality is starting to set in here that we're in for a period of a major, dare I use the R word, rebuilding to fix this thing. And there may not be any easy way to fix it as well. I know that the thinking was we got Sylvia Fowles one more year. Let's try to ramp it up, take advantage of what she offers. And so to that extent, you don't want to rebuild with her. But effectively, it's almost starting to look like that might well be what's happening with your favorite basketball team. Last but not least, well, it doesn't have to necessarily be last. It's kind of a potpourri, I guess you could say, segment. I meant to get to this on Friday. Eric Kendricks, here's the headline from the Star Tribune. Eric Kendricks puts, quote, fear-based organization in the past as he helps shape the Vikings' changes. I've made my position clear on this before. I think one quote has been used to manipulate and oversimplify a very complicated issue that, frankly, has as much to do with a team not playing very well as it does with the question of what kind of culture was in place with Mike Zimmer as a coach. Anybody who listens to this show or the weekday show knows that I certainly am capable of being critical of Zimmer and some of the mistakes he's made. But I think this thing has got completely out of hand, as often does when a regime change takes place, and then we get one quote and we use it to oversimplify and make it seem as if people were walking around on eggshells, afraid to open their mouths, far beyond what was really the case. And I have reason to believe that this applies here. And in fact, if you read the story, this is a Ben Gessling story, Kendricks almost sounds like he's tired of talking about it. But he's being asked about it yet again. And so to that extent, I guess he feels like, well, okay, well, we'll talk about it again. And I also have been led to believe that if there was fear, it had maybe as much to do with the training staff as it does the head coach. The question of what was the culture as it pertains to coming back from injury, whether there was too much pressure being put on players. Can that be a problem? Yes. Ultimately, if that, I will say, if a trainer is doing that, if even that's fair, if a trainer is doing that, it is ultimately the responsibility of the head coach to nip that in the bud, and because it's his responsibility to say that's not the message that we want to convey to players. But I think this thing has been taken to this absurd place, as if, I'll put it this way, if the Vikings do better this year, trust me when I say many of the stories will be about, see, they can breathe now. And now that they can breathe, look how much better they're playing. And it might have something to do with it, but it also might not have anything to do with it. Improvement might be due to a number of things. The defense getting healthier for the first time in a while. A couple of the additions. Defense couldn't play any worse than it did last year. It's going to have to play better than it was last year. And perhaps a guy with an offensive mind taking a fresh look at some interesting pieces and bringing something else to the equation. It might end up, my gut tells me it's going to have more to do with schematics and how you utilize players and, believe it or not, perhaps even play calls and play calling philosophy than it does that we were scared to walk from point A to point B. We never knew when Zimmer was going to spring out of nowhere and just start yelling at us. It's just got kind of preposterous. And I've heard from a few people there that indeed that even some players themselves had reached out to Zimmer and said that this thing got a little bit crazy. But on the fear issue, I really wish it would have been drilled down upon more about, okay, where was that fear coming from? Was it the head coach? Or is it this perception that the trainer was too impatient? And by the way, all trainers are impatient to a certain extent. That's the nature of the business. There are, well, used to be 16 games, now 17 games in a season. That's it. Because of the nature of a National Football League season, as compressed as it is, there's going to be built-in pressure. And guess what, boys and girls? There's going to be built-in fear. Now, does that mean every coach has to be throwback and act like Attila the Hun? Of course not. I'm just not convinced that Zimmer did to that same, to the degree that's now being suggested. And again, if you read the comments from Kendricks, see if I can find the money quote from this. Not going to talk about last season. Really, it's a new year. It's a new day. It's almost like, well, why are you guys, you know, we had a great conversation at the end of the season, throughout the offseason a little bit. So, okay, I think he's almost ready to, I don't know, I'm not saying he regrets what he said, but I think perhaps we have reason to question whether this is another example of a, okay, regime change, what happened? What's going on there? And guess what? At the point where things don't go well, it is not difficult to find the people who say, to jump on and say, here's what was wrong, or this was bad, or that was bad. And they might mean it, or they might have their own axes to grind, or it might be a combination of all of those things. And at the end of the day, you get, I think, not a real accurate reading of exactly what went on there. It wasn't, I don't believe it was quite as autocratic as was suggested. Doesn't mean there weren't some criticisms that are worthy. But my God, it's gotten to the point where we apparently feel obligated to keep going back to that same well. And the new coach smartly is playing into it. You know, he's reminding everybody that you know, he's not just around. He might be an offensive coach, but he's spending time around the defensive guys as well. Implication being Zimmer never did, and maybe Zimmer could have done a better job of that aspect of it. It isn't to say he couldn't have done a better job. But I think things have gotten completely out of proportion. And I'm not looking forward. Well, I am looking forward to an improved Vikings season, because that would be good for everybody, including this station. It would be refreshing. But I'm not looking forward to then what the reasons will be as they'll be laid out, that players felt liberated in a way that they hadn't previously. I think it's Zimmer was not quite the Attila the Hun. I've tried to get him on a couple times, but unsuccessfully to this point. We'll keep trying that as well, only because he isn't above criticism. He made mistakes. It probably, you can argue, was time. They had a right to make a move at the time they did it, but he's never really had a chance to, well, I shouldn't say that. I'm sure reporters have given him a chance. He just hasn't taken it. To offer up his own views on some of these oversimplifications that are going on, and that people afraid, that terrified to talk to Zimmer. I think that's been, based on what I'm hearing, a little bit on the overdone side as well. Bradshaw and Brian inbox is open, booth@cafen.com. A couple people have said it's time to tank for Paige Buckets, Paige Beckers, maybe. I don't know. We've talked about that with Guardsy. I think she's still got more time is the problem. I don't think she's eligible. I think you're 2 years off before she can go pro, if I'm not mistaken. So I don't know. I it makes sense. I mean, what we're reminded of is, in effect, this team has never recovered from Maya Moore retiring. They just haven't. Now, big part of it were the other people, pieces they lost that got too old, moved on, Lindsey Whalen, Simone Augustus, etc. But talent matters. We see, I think, the moral of the story involving the Lynx is that remains the case, no matter how effective and how established the coaches indeed might have been. Real quick, NB, by the way, Lanch Blues, what's the, they're three games in, right?
Yeah, I believe it's 2-1.
It's 2-1?
Lanch.
Lanch won last night, I think.
Correct. Yep, 5-2.
5-2, so they're up
controversial,
two.
Too, because Bennington got steamrolled.
Yeah, he got hammered. Is it a legitimate goon play?
Depends on who you ask.
Yeah, it depends on who you ask.
Yeah.
We'll talk some NBA and certainly about the Tim Connelly story, because allegedly he is chatting with Glenn Taylor this weekend. He, of course, is the president of basketball operations for the Denver Nuggets. And it's a pretty unusual situation when you have a guy in a position, in that position already, talking to another team, even another Western Conference team, about that same job. As I understand it, and Johnny, I think, will give us details on this tomorrow, his contract is such that he can indeed, it's not tampering, he can talk to other teams. That's not always the case, even though there might be some precedents being set here that could be used against the Wolves later, we're told. But this is, I think, a perfect example of the changes we're going to see with the new owners, that they're pushing. I don't think there's any doubt about it. They want to go big. Conley is viewed as a big move. I think it would be a big move. There are a lot of people who say, well, what's wrong with Gupta? Look at what's, it seemed to work out okay here. I'm not exactly sure. That may be true, but I'm not exactly sure you could say, well, here's what he did. He inherited sort of the coat. He inherited pretty much everything to a certain extent and just sort of kept it together. Now, he didn't make any trades at the deadline that you could say might hurt their chances. I'm not offended by the idea of not necessarily just promoting Gupta just because we had a good season. And I think what we're finding out is these new guys, they want high profile. High profile doesn't always mean better, but clearly that's what they've chosen to do. And it'll be interesting to see whether Conley is willing to make the switch. That's the part we don't know. Because obviously he's going to a less accomplished franchise. Maybe he feels like he's run the course and he's stale in Denver. They've had major injury issues, and he wants a new challenge with some talent. I'd have no problem with it. I think it would be a bold move if the Wolves indeed can make it. Buckets injured second half against the Celtics in Boston, but Adebayo stepped up tall, and the Heat, in what's being described as an adult big boy win, take a 2-1 lead in that series. I'm sure we'll talk about that with Johnny tomorrow as well. Cake Show is coming up. That's between 11 and 1 o'clock, and we will be back with you to start Bumper to Bumper, as I mentioned, at 3 o'clock Monday afternoon. We'll have the lights on right here on The Fan.